So here's a TV quiz for all you sitcom watchers. Do you remember a comedy show called Raising Hope? Anybody remember a show called Raising Hope? Probably not. It only ran from 2010 to 2014. It was about a young man called Jimmy Chance, who was a 23-year-old who cleaned swimming pools for his living. And he had a chance romantic encounter, unbeknownst to him, with a wanted felon, actually a serial killer on the run. It's a laugh a minute. And while she was in prison, he found out that she gave birth to a character called, his daughter, called Hope, who he must now raise with his family's help, and they're very incapable of doing so, including his grandmother, Cloris Leachman, who can barely care for herself, let alone a baby. It was a quirky show, but it made me laugh out loud often with its kind of over-the-top plot of Raising Hope. Sadly, hope hardly seems like a laughing matter today. Just raising hope, holding on to hope, is difficult. This week's slaughter of 50 Muslim worshipers in their mosque, that would be about either side of this sanctuary, imagine. Along with the other shooting deaths in synagogues and churches here in our nation and around the world, are tragic results of hatred, fear, division, and violence that dominate and manipulate our lives, nations, and world. The shooter and those who would use terror are signs of the growing intolerance and the demise of civility among us. And the litany of fearful things that sap our hope goes on and on and on, like the growing nuclear threat again from Russia and from North Korea, saying they have pinpointed a place for their weapons to hit just about an hour away from here. Or the opioid addiction that leads to 14 deaths a week here in Washington State. That's 2 people a day in Washington State. Our neighbors, perhaps friends, maybe even family members taken. Our grandchildren's future will be greatly impacted by climate change, which we can't even seem to be able to agree upon it or how to possibly start to deal with it. There's toxic water right here on Whidbey Island. The list goes on, and I haven't even touched the personal fears that people have of illness and death and economics and family troubles. You know, we must look at what's happening in the world. We can't close our eyes to it in worship or turn our back on it. The end of Psalm 27. The psalmist says, I believe I shall see the goodness of God, Yahweh, in the land of the living. But I have to tell you, there are days like this past week when I look around with despair, thinking, where is that goodness reflecting God in the land of the living? I don't see it. How do we raise hope in a world in the midst of fear and tragedy that overwhelms us to the point of hopelessness? Looking back, I remember a time 20 years ago in the fall of 1998 when I was in the midst of a tragic catastrophe caught up in Hurricane Mitch in Nicaragua. Do any of you remember Hurricane Mitch in 1998? Hurricane Mitch dropped a historic amount of rainfall in Honduras, Guatemala, and Nicaragua from October 29th to November 3rd. 6 days of constant rain and deaths due to the catastrophic flooding went over 11,000, with 11,000 people missing and roughly 2.7 million people left homeless as a result of the hurricane. I was part of a Habitat for Humanity trip, building trip of 15 people who had planned for 2 years to go to Nicaragua. We just hadn't planned to go during Hurricane Mitch. And I remember when I got back, my dear brother emailed me saying, "Hey, don't you guys get the Weather Channel?" Well, we did, and actually we looked at it, and Hurricane Mitch was supposed to go up into the Gulf of Mexico. So we had our t-shirts, and we left to go to build homes in Yenatego, Nicaragua. And there we are, building a foundation for one of the 10 homes that we were going to build. We got 1 day of work in, and then the rain started, and it rained, and it rained, and it rained for days. Now, the pictures are not very good quality. Remember, it is in the middle of a hurricane. We were staying in a mountain youth camp with sturdy buildings, but the frightening moments always came at night as the rain continued to pound and the wind howled on the metal roofs of our dwelling places. The little creek that you could walk over on the day that we arrived at camp became a rapid flowing flood over the road to our camp, which also became a waterway. Everything that we as North Americans take for granted was stripped away from us. Information, communication, work goals, security, immediate availability of food and water and electricity, all gone. But despite the weather, campesinos, the local farmers and workers from the Yenatego community brought us food and messages using ropes to cross the rapid waters up the mountain road. I remember one group that came to us on a day, and they had a bag and a note, and the note said in English, which they handed to us because they only spoke Spanish, that they handed us a note and it said, "We brought everything we could find in town." And the bag had a loaf of bread, 2 bottles of water, and a jar of mayonnaise. And never did mayonnaise taste so sweet. And as the community in the hills around us lost their homes, they came to join us. And we shared food, we played together, we sang together, we celebrated Halloween together in the dark, and worshiped together. Ultimately, when the rain subsided, we worked with our neighbors to open up the country road, which would be their lifeline to the world outside and ours to the main highway. And after 9 days, we received a word that a helicopter would be sent to pick us up. And we were told to hike to the highway where a Nicaraguan army truck would take us to a nearby army base. And along the way, we saw some of the devastation and the mudslides along the road. You can see this is a main highway, and people are camped out on the side of it, getting clean water, as you can see in this photo. We're driving in a truck through it. At the army base, an old Soviet military helicopter arrived to carry us out with just our passports, our prayers, and the clothes we were wearing. And because the weight and the passengers had a limit, we all had to honestly tell how much we weighed. As we got onto the helicopter, I remember seeing a rainbow in the sky. We got home. Now, the ironic part is that by the time, after 9 days, that we left Central America, Hurricane Mitch had actually come over Florida, and we had to fly into Hurricane Mitch once more just to get home. Once we got home, the Habitat for Humanity group soon started to plan a return trip to rebuild homes of those devastated in the hurricane. You know, our experience in Nicaragua was that while everything else was stripped away from us, everything that we take for granted as North Americans, we continued to know and to support each other with the one thing that can't be stripped away from us, that can never be taken away from us, and that's our hope. Our hope based on a faith in a power and presence with us, even in the midst of tragedy and death. At the same time, we received and witnessed incredible acts of courage and compassion from the Nicaraguan campesinos and our neighbors. The people that we thought we were going down to serve saved us every day. They reached out to us, risking their lives, leaving their own homes to bring us food and water, communication, and spiritual support. And together with the campesinos and our neighbors, we encouraged each other. We translating English into Spanish and Spanish into English, and often communicating in ways that needed no translation as we bridged the barriers of language, national identity, religious traditions, and economics. For me, it was a powerful experience of that beloved community that God calls us to here on earth in the land of the living. A vision for me of what the church and our communities are always meant to be. Our hope and the support of others gave us the strength to survive. Even in the moments when survival was questionable, my hope knew that no matter what happened, an eternal power would be present in life, in death, in life beyond death. There is a Tibetan saying that tragedy should be utilized as a source of strength. No matter what sort of difficulties, how painful experience is, if we lose our hope, that's our real disaster. Anne Frank in the Diary of a Young Girl wrote, "Where there's hope, there's life. It fills us with fresh courage and makes us strong again." During the Lenten season, we recall that people of faith have faced desperate and tragic and trying times throughout history, like the Hebraic people in Egypt in the book of Exodus. Remember how the book of Exodus starts? This is not a rhetorical question. This is actually a Sunday school quiz. Who can tell me how the book of Exodus starts? Please speak out. What? Book of Exodus begins, and you and the first class are all going back to Sunday school. First worship. Book of Exodus begins with the people, the Hebraic people back or in Egypt, and they were in honored positions, but then a new Pharaoh rose and he enslaved them and made them work hard to build the pyramids. And their cruelty of their slave masters made them cry out to God. And in the opening of the book of Exodus, they cry out, and you have this sense that God does not hear their cries. And then a child is born into this situation, Moses, which means out of the water. And his mother hid him in the bulrushes. And Pharaoh's daughter found him, and he grew up in the royal household until he gets in trouble, kills another Hebrew slave, and runs. A felon on the run. You think that the plot of Raising Hope is over the top? Moses runs into the desert, and what does Moses run into in the desert? The burning bush! Yay! Moses runs into a bush that is filled with flames but not consumed. And out of that bush, God speaks and says, "Take your shoes off, Moses. You're on holy ground. And then God speaks to Moses out of the bush and says, Moshe, Moshe, tell the people I've heard their cries. I've heard their cries, and I'm going to save them and bring them out of Egypt and into a land of milk and honey. And I want you to go and do it. Lead them out and tell Pharaoh to let them go. Now, I remember seeing a cartoon of Moses responding back to the burning bush quite a while ago. In fact, you know this is very dated when you hear it. Moses looks back to the burning bush and says, well, that's an interesting idea, but what would Alan Greenspan think of it? And that's about what Moses says. He says, well, if you want me to go down there and tell Pharaoh to let my people go and lead them out, who shall I say has sent me? What power and authority do I go by? And out of the burning bush, God says, tell them that Yahweh sends you. And for those of you who know Hebrew, you know that Yahweh is the verb to be in Hebrew twice with a conjunction in between, to be. And we don't know what tense it is, and we don't even know what the conjunction is. So it can be translated as it often is, I am what I am, or I will be what I was, or I was what I will be. I have also heard it translated as, I will be what I want to be, which sounds more like a five-year-old than the omnipotent God. But I was reading a Hebrew Torah, and it gave a translation for Yahweh that has moved me ever since. And the translation that this Hebraic Torah gave was Yahweh, I will be what the future demands. I will be what the future demands. And I went, wow, what a name for God. What a great name for the God who was indeed what the Hebraic people needed and bringing God, them out of Egypt and slavery into a land of freedom and blessing. What a name for the God of Jesus Christ, who in Jesus' life and death and resurrection, God has overcome cruelty, death, tragedy, to create a future for us so that we can be with God forever. And what a name for the God that I know in my life when I am so low and down that all I can say is, God, you are going to have to do tomorrow for me because I can't do it by myself. I will be what the future demands. Our hope is an eternal force that will be what our future requires, no matter what that future be. The question is not whether there will be a future. The question is whether we, as the people of the God who will be what the future demands, will be the people that the tomorrow requires. People raising and acting upon hope in and for the world. That doesn't mean that the future will simply be what we want it to be. There's a wonderful new book out by Kate Davies. I don't know if you know Kate. She lives here on Whidbey Island, and she speaks. In fact, she just spoke here at Trinity Church in the Greening Congregation Symposium in January, and she spoke about hope and renewal and her book, Intrinsic Hope, Living Courageously, Living Courageously in Troubled Times. I encourage you to check it out. She writes, intrinsic hope is different from conventional hope because it is not based on the expectation that life will give us what we hope for. Instead, intrinsic hope is a deep abiding trust in whatever happens and in the human capacity to care for it and attend to it positively. It's about making the very best of every situation and never, ever giving up. Vaclav Havel, a democratic leader from Poland, wrote, hope is a state of mind, not a state of the world. Hope is the ability to work for something that is good, not just because it stands any chance to succeed. The more unlikely the situation is in which we demonstrate hope, the deeper the hope is. Intrinsic hope is not something we need to find or create, because it's already in us. It's inherent in all life. Cicero said, "Where there is life, there is hope." And I find it such an incredible and remarkable gift that the universal and eternal power that we call God has placed within all of us hope, the life-giving force of hope. We gather here to support each other in hope and be that hope by caring for each other, caring for creation, and caring for those shaken by the destructive winds of life, by creating a world of shalom, salam, peace, goodness, and compassion for all God's children and creation. What else can we do? We are born for this. As St. Patrick said, "I pray to God to give me perseverance, that I be a faithful witness to the end of my life." And so on those days when I look around and wonder where that goodness reflecting God is present in the land of the living, I raise up my hope by remembering that I have seen goodness reflecting the beloved community in the midst of devastation in Nicaragua. I've seen saving courage of campesinos who brought mayonnaise, water, bread, and prayers. I've experienced the hope of a power that will be what our future demands. Knowing that I have seen this goodness raises my hope of seeing that goodness again. I live and work to be that hope in the land of the living. And I invite you to join me.